Welcome to Queued Up with Ziz and Pam, where we have powerful conversations as to what it means to be educated in the 21st century. So we are especially happy to have Peter Hochstrauser back for part two, where we're going to talk a little bit more about his innovation in education. So what I'm going to do is read Peter's background to you so that you can get an idea of like how great of a job he's doing and what he's so excited about. So Peter is an innovative education specialist. For 20 years, he has been driven to connect academia to reality. He is the host of the podcast Disrupt Education, highlighting journeys outside the traditional education system and educational reformers. He is also the co-founder of Hall Pass Education, an education think tank specializing in innovative educational solutions designed to guide people through their hallway of life. What a great analogy, the hallway of life. I love that. I'm so excited to hear more about that. So you know what, Peter? Let's dive in. Tell us about that, the hallway of life.
Right. I have to give that to my business partner, Audrey Boyle, who's amazing, just an amazing woman here in Chicago. You know, we always thought about roaming the hallways of life. And, you know, we see all these doorways and we think the one all the way at the end that has been chosen for us is the only doorway at the end of that whole journey, whatever our journey is. And for us, we're looking at education, learning, and leveling yourself up. We realize when we are roaming the hallways, if you think about yourself in high school, say, and you're like, I just don't like this class. I'm going to go to the bathroom and you're going to just walk the hallways, right? I did it. So you're looking around, you see different things going on in different classes. You're like, I wonder who's in there, what's happening in there. There's my buddy in there. Really, that is kind of a look at the way we look at life. There are so many different opportunities out there. There are so many different doors. And once you see all the doors, you can look around and you, like a buddy of mine, Cody Cotton of a Greater Good Foundation says you can get opportunity drunk, right? You're like, oh my gosh, I have all this opportunity with all the technology and the information. So Hall Pass Education, what we realize is there's a gap in academia and reality and industry. And we're looking to connect those two things because you have skill sets that you do, whether you're in the classroom, you're on the sports field, you're on the stage, you're in a club. And a lot of students don't really understand that. And when I talk about students, I talk about K all the way through college, some masters, you know, we're like, okay, what did I just do there? So we help people lean in and find who they are and what their skill sets are, and then basically try to put it with their purpose in life. And that's how we connect it. That's the hallway of life. And we're just a couple of people who like to give you some passes and walk you through. And you're really the driver. You're the person holding the pass. But you also need that person in the hallway not to say, get your butt down to that last doorway. You need somebody in the hallway who's like, what can I help you with?
I love that. As a matter of fact, when I was in grad school, I took a class where they talked about Krumbolt's theory of planned happenstance, which is exactly that, is that when we're so conditioned to the trajectory and we believe it's a straight line, not the zig and zag that it actually is. But the theory of planned happenstance is to actually be aware of what's going on and ready to pivot, not so put your blinders on and focus on the goal. And I think now, of course, we're all forced to do that anyway, because, you know, we're all unmoored from what was traditionally our pathways or believed. You know, there was no certainty, but we all assumed there was going to be a certainty. Right. So, yes. And so we have this now, my daughter, who was at one of the colleges, and our deal was, if colleges go online, you're taking a gap year. And she is now unmoored and having to navigate. So tell me, how does Hall Pass Education take someone, she would have gone into her junior year, she'll be 21, you know, here she is.
Right. And I'm so happy that she's doing it. Just met her like online briefly, but it really is a place where, you know, the old gap years used to be, you know, some dude going over to Europe and just hiking it and, you know, maybe having a few drinks and that's about it, right? It is completely changed. I think we figured out how to really do this. So what we do at Hall Pass is we're launching it September 14th. It's called the Level Up Gap Year Program, or the Level Up Program. We are taking a cohort of 10, and we're gonna walk them through basically, you know, who they are. We're gonna have them lean into their brand. We're gonna get them, you know, up to speed on their online presence. And we're gonna teach them how to use social media, not to be used by social media. And we're also then going to start creating that network, right? You know, a lot of the people that we've worked with, and it's Dr. Peter James, myself, and Audrey Boyle are the three partners in this. We come from vast different backgrounds. And we also have taught different areas. So I'm more the high school entrepreneur. Peter James is a professional corporate coach and an entrepreneur teacher at a community college. Audrey Boyle has been in corporate America. So we bring all that lens in, and we're like, okay, this is what we're going to do through this cohort. And we're there with you. We're accountability partners. So what you're doing is, when you apply for this, you're saying, okay, I'm ready to be, you know, working with you and learning with you. And I want to stress that, because in gap year programs, like, I don't know what, you know, person A, B, and C are going to go through. Okay. I'm just trying to find out what they're doing. And then we go all the way through where we set up a design thinking project for themselves, and they work on teams. So going back to, you know, the previous podcast we were on about the 21st century learner, like, we're not just saying you have to be adaptable to change and you really have to come up with creative problem solution sets. We're doing it. And that's what the program is. And you don't have to check box. There is no grade here. You walk away with basically a newer self brand that is online, and a network of at least 50 professionals that you have strategically networked with, who can answer and help answer questions and help you along your journey. So that's what our gap year is going to be about.
That's phenomenal. I mean, I love it, because all of us are fans of Dr. I, and she talks about that 70-20-10.
Yes.
70% is the experiential learning, you know, 20% is from your peers, and the 10% the books. And you, as a school teacher, I mean, does that formula just, you know, is it 5% the books, or is it 2%?
Unfortunately, I think it's, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I think it's falling. My wife is a reading specialist, and so she's like, you know, but I will tell you, if you get that to the 10%, and it depends on what kind of reading, you know, there's technical reading, there's online reading, there's all different kinds of reading now that we're trying to figure out. And some video now is considered, you know, literature and reading. So if you can hit that 10%, man, you can jump into anybody's mind, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So so the cohort, how did you choose them? Is this something that's going to be, are you going to franchise this? What are you thinking?
Well, in all reality, we're going to make billions of dollars. No, no. I think, you know, what we want to do is we really want to learn. We really want to learn from our first cohort. So it just came about. We're going to pick 10. You have to apply for it. The application process will be coming late August. We're working on our funnel right now. But we do have that there's a three-step application process where the students are going to have to be, or it doesn't have to be students. It can be anybody pivoting, really. Are going to have to go through three different things that kind of make them uncomfortable. They're a little bit out of the range. So, for example, one of the things they're going to have to do is just kind of like say, hey, okay, show us how you're creative, you know? And it's just going to be, we're going to leave it out there so they actually have to figure out to do something. We really don't want a lot of people saying, okay, Pam, do I have to do 1, 2, and 3? Or what does this look like, right? We want people to have a little bit of guts, because yeah, you're gonna have to step out there outside your comfort zone in this thing. And you know, we're gonna pick 10 and we're gonna roll with it. Who knows what's gonna happen? I don't like that. My wife says I have a 3-day memory, which I think is good some days. I do remember our anniversary. But yeah, I think, you know, we see great value in this. Timing's right now. You have a lot of things, like, you know, people don't want to pay the money to go online for that. And I think with that being said, people are actually understanding that, you know, really, you know, when I went to college, it was more like, hey, I kind of learn how to hang out with buddies, and they're all in different professions now. And there was a network there. It wasn't official kind of networking. And we started to understand, you know, hey, what are all the differences that we have? How do we learn from each other? It was less the academia. So we're trying to figure out how people can go even deeper, even if they go back into college, if they go into college, if they go off and become an entrepreneur or get hired. We really want to give them that deep sense of self and what their skills are, and then connect it with passion. It's closer than people think. It's so much closer than people think. I've got a story of a young man who was wanting to take pictures, a young man I work with, and he wanted to be with the Cubs and take some pictures of the Chicago Cubs here. It hurt me because I'm a Sox fan, but that's cool. But anyway, within 24 hours, I got to tell you, with my network, I showed him, and he was actually taking pictures for an ESPN where they were doing some of the work with the Cardinals and the Cubs. Wasn't getting paid, but man, they were giving some good seats and those things. So close. Yeah. And he didn't realize that with a network and a mentor and people who guide you, you can get there fast.
Right.
You are describing my dream high school, because I think this is the future. The economy's changed so fast. Competency trumps pedigree, where just getting that degree does not give you the value. We're certainly seeing that, and we're seeing that even more with all the calls I'm getting of people are like, but I did everything right. Ah, now what do I do? So it's really, really being responsible for your own life and taking charge. So what an ideal opportunity to begin. So my dream is to not to have gap years, because you would be living this prior, and by the time you come out, and there's so many programs now, they're actually beginning to design around the model that you're talking about. So to what extent are you paying attention to some of those other models that are out there and kind of taking the parts of them that connect the real world to the already competency-based, people who already have the initiative? Talk more about that.
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's exciting. It really is. You know, the first thing you do in entrepreneurship when you're learning about it is you look at competition. And the first thing my high school students do is, I've taught entrepreneurship and business, is like, we got to destroy them, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's totally the opposite. Yeah. Like, you know, Coca-Cola needs Pepsi, right? Like,
yeah.
We all need each other. You know, the Bears need the Packers, right? Well, some years they do. But like, so you need to work with people. And yeah, so, you know, man, I think, I can't remember the guy's name. It was from WeWork, and he started a program where they started the business analytics program. And it was before WeWork bought him out. And it was three trimesters. So you go one, you would dive into yourself and understand who you are. Second one was how to do the teamwork and the skill sets. And the third one, they'd send you off to like Apple, IBM, or whatever. And they were hiring these, it's young and old. They were all getting into this, and it was really cool. And then WeWork bought it. And then, but then you have people like Austin Allred. You have people like Isaac Morehouse. You have, yeah, T.K. Coleman. You have all these entrepreneurs that are coming in and understanding, okay, so you have Lambda School. You have Holberton. And all of it started to grow out of technology, right? So how do I code? Because everybody was supposed to code in the last 5 years. And then that's changed. But they also, what we learned from it is, okay, so how are they doing this with an actual skill set? But what if you're not interested in that skill set? Mm-hmm. How do you build the person to find those interests? And that's really where we built off of these. The unschooling movement has been incredible. The homeschooling piece has changed a lot. And then, you know, these years, you know, we've interviewed some of the same people, and it's just really tremendous opportunity, because there are so many of us out here, mm-hmm, but yet there's so many individuals who need that individual kind of path. So it's going to take even a lot more to create these programs. But there is a Patino High School up in Fresno, which is very cool, because they took the incubator program, where it's a lean startup, and they take their sophomore year of high school. They have kids in it. So it's a California public school, and they have to unschool them. They have to teach them, don't do that, come over here. So, and Iowa Big is another one. These schools, you know, they're growing, and they're amazing. I just, you know, I don't have patience. I want to see them grow faster.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, because, you know, what COVID-19 has done, this pandemic, has put a spotlight on the inequities of school.
Yes.
And so, you know, when you think about what's actually happening from a social justice standpoint, how do we help students who may not have the technology, so to speak, or the opportunities to get the mentors? So what, you know, like, I know I'm asking a really big question, so let's just maybe, you know, drill down to your school that you're going into, and then maybe think about the Chicago public school system, you know, overall.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great question. It's a very big, it's the elephant in the room. It's how do we look at this? Well, I think first of all, we have to take a look at education was designed by people who look like me. And it's not for everyone. And it's not like everybody has to go through, but we're still trying to get everybody to go through an education that is look like me and my culture and what I am as a white male. But I think what we're realizing here is there's an opportunity to really connect community with their educators in the schools. There's a reason why there's not a lot of Black and Brown educators. And it's not because they don't care about education. It's because they didn't like the system and it was inequitable when they were in it, in my opinion. So, and a lot of the educators that I know who don't look like me will say, well, I'm coming into this, and then they'll hit a wall. And they're like, they're not listening. They're, you know, yeah, we've had affinity groups in these things, which I've actually learned a ton from so many different students, which is amazing. I think that's another lucky thing that I have. But you have to understand, like, it's my way isn't the right way. It could be the right way for me, but how do we do that? So, you know, I've worked with Novus Club out of Chicago. We worked with their main township schools. They have Chicago Tech Academy. And last year, I always go to their pitch events. And so the kids come in and they pitch ideas. And this one young man who was from Bronzeville really just started talking about, what if we just took a bus and that was our school for the day throughout the city? And I was just like, I want to give you like my card right now. Like, you know, and I think that's the way. We really need to listen to people in their communities about what they really want. It's not what I want. I can't fix problems that I don't know about or I haven't lived. And I think in education, we're really missing that. I created a thing like right before Disrupt Education. It was called the Community Learning Project. And I just thought, okay, what if we brought everybody together? And we're not in a school. I mean, you could be in a school, but it can be a community building where, all right, so we need history here. All right, so we have a historical marker here. We need to do something different, right? There's a lot of that going on. We're tearing down things and rebuilding things, which is exciting. It's scary. It's, you know, but how then do we really do, we can bring students into that, bring that into a project, then actually have them rebuild something there that means more to people around a community. But guess what? Now you're talking about law, you're talking about mathematics, you're talking about everything there. Yes. And that's the way I think that we can make education more equitable, is one system can't fix every community. The community has to use the system however they want to, because this is the United States, this is the way it's supposed to be, to build what they need and they want out of their community. Yeah, you're always going to have people like, I don't want that, or I don't want this, but there's so much learning involved in that. Even if, like, you know, you start with a bike rack, you know, where should we put the bike rack? Something that simple will teach everything that is in the curriculum, in pretty much any curriculum. So I think that's, to me, that would be my take on the equitable look in education.
I love that. I think it's similar to big picture learning, which starts with the human being in the real world about things they care about to change. And it's about, and we have this motto too, which is empower more, help less. We're so busy trying to help them in our image of what we thought worked for everybody. And of course it doesn't. We're finding out it works for almost nobody. In fact, there is no average person according to Todd Rose. So it can't, because we're all measured against this mythical average. So I love this. So as we're going into this time of disruption that is imposed, or however you want to look at it, or that it's an opportunity, what do you think is the opportunity for what's happening with these micro schools or homeschooling movement of parents taking, you know, control? How do we help in some of those areas that might not have parents who can do that? How can we make it more equitable? I mean, there's all sorts of movements, including allocating the dollars to everybody, which would solve a lot in some of these areas because they would be able to pay the same amount of money for the same, you know, kind of teacher. So how does all this, how do we use this?
Yeah, that's another big one. You guys are throwing
big. We're big. Go big or go
but,
home.
But it's true. Yeah. I think it's a process. I think through this, there are a lot of people who are looking now at different schooling options, right? People don't want to send their kids to a school in fear of getting sick or, you know, anything like that, which is legit. You know, I'm not going to argue with anybody's, you know, lens. But then they're looking at, okay, but I can't stay home, or what does this look like? So I think outside of this, I think, you know, unschooling, homeschooling, people are actually now understanding what that looks like rather than what we thought it was, right? Back in my day when I was in school, like the homeschooler we thought was an ultra conservative Christian who was just somebody who went to church all week and they had no social skills whatsoever. That's a complete stereotype. Like that is so changed now. So that, you know, there's a lot of different things going on and going out and doing some different things. I would bet if politics are right and the money's there, we should build these community centers to where if there is a, say you have a one parent household or a two parent household and everybody's like out and they cannot have a place, there would be 5 to 10, you know, cohorts of young people who go into this where it's not a school building. It's exactly what we're talking about. There are homeschool facilitators. There are unschooling facilitators.
Maker spaces. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. The maker spaces and those types of things. And, you know, I mean, there's powerful unions here in Chicago, and I don't want to say yes or no to them, but I think, you know, we have to take a look at different allocations of money and finances as well. We have to give some people some choice, because right now the choice is to walk into a system that was created by, you know, white males. I mean, let's be honest. So how do we look at that differently? And we have to get over our fear of losing our profession and our job. We really do. And I think this, in this time right now, we're getting a little boost of understanding, you know what, I'm not really going to lose if I pivot a little bit and I start to mentor and those different things as well. So yeah, there's a lot of things in play that need to come in, but yeah, I really think that it's going to open at least some more discussion, and people are going to start to realize that these things that we saw before are really not what we thought, and we're learning from that. And, you know, to me, that's the exciting piece of going into something that's just, it's scary. It's different. But that's where the opportunity lies. And that goes back to my tweet of why I think this is going to be the greatest year. Man. I am so comfortable being uncomfortable. It's weird. I don't know, but I love it.
It sounds like you were at my yoga class. It's one of my, I've been saying get comfortable being uncomfortable. As a matter of fact, that was a Zoom that I've done with summer school students. I said, get comfortable being uncomfortable. And that was our theme. And we just talked about it. So what I want is, let us know how we can keep track of what you're doing with your cohort. Is that something you're going to be sharing through Twitter or Instagram? I would love to just track the story, because I'm like, man, if you can do this, then, you know, maybe you can give me a little script as to like what I can do this upcoming fall as well.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We're across the board, Twitter, Instagram, we're on LinkedIn. It's Hall Pass Education. I believe our Twitter is Hall Pass EDU. And if you go to Peter Hostrasser, at Peter Hostrasser on Twitter, I'm always retweeting their stuff. We do live daily broadcasts there, where we also have a YouTube channel called Hall Pass Education. My co-founders and I, we talk about just different things for about 5 minutes. And we put them out live, usually every morning early. Facebook is also a group there. And really, it's getahallpass.com. It is building out right now. We just have signed up for some more information. So if you want to understand or get on a short list, we're about ready to put a questionnaire out for people who are interested in this. We're going to meet people where they are. We want to see, are we looking at, you know, younger people? Are we looking at people who are mid, you know, career and want to pivot? And it actually, the cool part about it is because when you look at the human, it works for everybody, right? Yeah. Like you're looking at the human. So yeah, getahallpass.com and you can throw your email in there and that will be the first step. And then you're going to start to see some more stuff come through.
That is so exciting. So in terms of parents, so obviously it's a fearful time because, you know, we're looking at not only health, but also, you know, future for our kids. So in terms of education and where it's going, how, you know, parents, I think, have not been able to step back because it's been so crazy responding to all the demands of a system to look at the compliance and the conformity and the individual achievement that's built into this system that is not allowing the skill set exactly that you're talking about. So how do you approach it with parents and how can parents be supportive of teachers like you to be able to move into this next stage of our education system reform or revolution, right? Or whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. I usually start with where they are again. I mean, really it is. I mean, there are some parents who are scrambling because they don't know, you know, what's happening in their households. My anxiety level has gone up here and there because we are sharing workspace now and those different things. And I'm lucky enough that I have a doorway over there. sometimes I'm out back and it's loud. I mean, I'm in Chicago, so it's, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. But like, you know, it really starts with, hey, look, I like to teach parents that the bottom line is we saw school in a certain way, right? And, you know, my son's, he's going into a sophomore year. My daughter's going into her seventh grade year. Well, they don't know what that looks like. So this could be a little bit more normal for them. So I think one of the biggest things is just to, you know, as much as you can, you got to scream in the pillow. It's cool. You know, I've done it. Yeah. My bourbon consumption has gone up a little. But I think, you know, like being there with your kids and talking to them and hearing what they're saying will teach you so much. And I think that's, as a parent, it's very difficult because we are still mourning. My family, we were mourning last night. We were like, oh my gosh, they're missing things that we got, but what did they get to do? So again, it's kind of that glass half full thing. So that's kind of the way I approach parents as much as possible. And, you know, when I'm in a system, you know, we got to do the best we got to do. We have parents who want to send our kids to school. I know I am happy actually that we're in a hybrid, that my son gets to go in somewhat. I do know there's dangers. But I also understand that it's very, very important for him to actually interact, you know, and albeit we have to trust our schools to do it safely. I think we had a great plan until we went virtual. I think there were some, you know, things that were in there. So, I will tell you, there's nothing in a system that is going to put your kids in harm's way if you choose to go that route. But we're growing too, so there's going to be a little bit of a work with that. Our administration, you know, they're not design thinkers, unfortunately, all the time. And that's just the way it goes. And so when I sit through a lot of meetings, we haven't really thought through the student lens all the time or the parent lens. And we need time to do that. And, you know, like me, I'm not a patient dude, but we have to be patient as parents. And that's the other thing that will help support everybody go through the change. The change is going to happen. It's going to happen. And we all kind of knew it. But this is just accelerating that change.
You know, with that being said, I'm just thinking about extracurricular activities. So I'm not sure what Chicago is doing. I know some states like the state of Maryland, there's no fall sports. And I think Michigan is trying to figure it out. So I'm not sure what Chicago's doing. But, you know, just overall, a lot of student athletes, a lot of people who may be student government, choir. I would imagine you could do student government through Zooms. You know, how are you all addressing it in the school system where you are?
I'm going to tell you something right now, and it's going to change in a minute. But really what they did is, so we'll look at athletics, because there's so many kids that learn through athletics, and there's so much power in athletics. Being an athlete myself, it was, they're moving some sports back and seeing what's going to happen. So football, they're moving back, the contact sports, but they are golf is wide open, right? Because you can socially distance. Tennis, you know, you can do that safely, for the most part. I mean, nothing's 100% safe, but so they're moving some things around. We just had a meeting with our co-curricular pieces today. We are going to start with Zoom, but you know, they had some of our cheer squad in the gym the other day, and they're apart, you know, 6 feet, and they can still go through, so they're adapting. But it is very important that we look at those things too, because I know, you know, a lot of people, including myself, learned a lot more from 3 o'clock to 8 o'clock PM, than in school sometimes. And a lot of the things, belonging is a piece of how and why students are engaged. And, so yeah, we're taking a look at that, and it's pivoting all the time. We're trying to do some things that are a little bit more. I just had this conversation with my colleague about how can we do something other than a Zoom or a meet, to get people together in a safe way, because our kids are going to be Zoomed out. Screen fatigue is going to happen. We're going to try to figure that out. So we're looking at all those different options. And again, that's where the pivot comes in.
And having the students help solve it as well. But it's interesting because Edith Iger said, expression is the antidote to depression. Like, even doing things where you're either writing, you know, something where you're turning it in, where people can see what's happening in other people's households, and then the opportunity for discourse, to say what's happening through my lens, what's happening through your lens, where we can begin to really, I mean, what citizenship is that? So is there that look? Of course, I'm all in for all these ideas. I'm like, not even a teacher, but I love it. But so to what extent do they utilize the student body to engage and solve the real world? This is where critical thinking comes in, when it's relevant. They don't do those stupid problems, you know? It's, they want to do something that matters to them. So are you seeing that people are looking, like, thinking about all these ideas? And
yeah, that's there. You're going to find those two different mindsets, right? We were having that conversation today about, like, what are we going to do with the, let's just throw things back for 2 weeks, and let's just start to pick students' brains. Like, how are you doing? What's happening there? That's what happened in the spring. As a matter of fact, I shoved curriculum out, and then I was like, whoa, let's reel this back in. Mm-hmm. And we found out a lot, and we can really learn a lot from these students. How do you think we can do this? I think the challenge comes in is, yeah, it's pretty easy to listen and have people at a table. The difficult part really is, and I've been at Equitable tables and affinity panels, is really actually the action behind it. Are we really going to put ourselves out there a little bit, and get away from our norms that we think are right? And are we going to take a look at, are we going to trust the kids coming in and different things like that? I personally, the only reason I'm doing what I'm doing is that, you know, I mean, oh my gosh, like if we listen to, you know, kind of older, I don't want to say old, I won't put age, but like really rigid, educators, we'd never have social media ever. Like, it would shut it all down, right? And you know what students taught me, like my son as well, like he taught me, like, dad, I'm building a car on this mod thing, and I'm talking to a kid in Germany. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, how's that working? You know, I was just like, you know, looking out my window and thinking, do I have to rake the leaves? Like, how did you do it? So, that is definitely part of it. And even in our business department, that's what we're going to do the first week. We have a little bit of stuff, you know, the get to know you and different things like that. Mm-hmm. But we really want to just hear. And sometimes it's between the lines, man. We have to understand, you know, these kids are going through 6 or 7 Zoom meetings or meetings or things a day.
Yeah. Ugh.
And, you know, if you've done 30 Zoom meetings a week, I'm about done, man. And I talked to my son about it. I'm like, how's that going to make you feel? He's like, I don't know, Dad, but it's probably not going to be good. So we have to think about different ways and listen to our clients. This is like a business, man. We got to listen to who we're working with and adapt to make it the best for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that approach. I mean, I can tell you, like what you just said, it's a real thing, especially the nonverbal. It's really difficult to pick up the nonverbal communication when you're on a Zoom or right. Google Hangout or whatever platform they're using. And it's tiring. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what research comes from this. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that you all are thinking about it. And I hope that the students, and more importantly, I hope that the teachers and the administrators will be listening, because I know for me, after four Zooms in one day, I'm done.
Me too.
And they're adaptable. So I love that. So what would be the closing words that you would want to share with our audience, and how do we keep track of you? I know you shared that you have a YouTube channel. You pretty much have every platform available. What's your favorite platform? And maybe just to play around with this a moment, which platform do you think would be the best for students to use, the one that they don't use, they aren't really using right now?
Right. I don't know if I can answer that question, because it depends on what the student wants, right? Like, if you're a creative, I kind of move them over to Instagram. If you're like driven to actually connect, and that's LinkedIn. If you like to show and to create like documentaries, and it's YouTube, you know. But I think you need them all. But so it's kind of on an individual basis. Man, it's tough to pick one. I'm at peterhostrasser.com or disrupteducation.co. That's where you find all my stuff. Twitter is where I talk to a lot of educators. You know, that's where, you know, I learn about, you know, okay, George Kuros and all these crazy people that are awesome. LinkedIn, I mean, we're working with Mike Yates, and that's how we connected. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, so it's really across the board. You know, I think in reality, what we do need to teach our kids, and I think this is something that is something that I can end with, is in this, when we're all in a digital area, we've got to find our family digitally as well as in a neighborhood, right? So there's opportunity. What I always tell young people and parents, if you're listening to this, it would be to get outside your comfort zone a little bit, find somebody who's doing something that you think is cool, and you don't have to do it the rest of your life, and ask them for advice. That's it. And that'll open up the conversation, because in times like these, I think people are looking at youth even more in a way to where we're not only mourning with them, but we're also looking at opportunity here. And I think that a lot of these students and the young people, and even old, I mean, I had some buddies who pivoted in their profession and are doing very well right now, is this too will pass, and there's opportunity in it. And it's just a growing pain. And you know what, do your best, but take care of yourself. Take care of yourself as well.
I love it. Peter, you are an inspiration. And I think that that's definitely the word, is to look for people that inspire you, and let's inspire each other. And it's such a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you, everyone. You're here with our special guest, Peter Hostrauser. And as he just said, you can find him on all of those platforms. And of course, Pam and I are at queuedup.com. So thank you, everyone, and have a great evening.
Wow. Thank you, guys.